The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A and B, your Ohio State podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined by Ari Wasserman. Ari, how freaked out should people be right now?
Can we do it on like a scale from 1 to 10?
Yeah, 1 to 10 is good. 1 to, oh my God, I can't believe this defense is going to keep Ohio State from winning a national championship again.
6.
6 is, I think 6 is reasonable.
0. About not getting to the playoff, because I saw some wacky takes on Twitter on Saturday, including one guy who for the last 12 hours has been in my mentions talking about how an Ohio State unbeaten version of itself won't get into the playoff in favor of 4-1 loss teams.
And you know, still I thought going. That guy made some really good points, and I think I'd like to explain to you now why I think the same thing.
Bill, I need this podcast because I need to talk to someone who's sane, because like I'm losing my mind. And no matter what you say, like this person is absolutely convinced that that's the case. And I know that losses and weird things that happen in games and whatever have Ohio State fans just kind of delirious, but that would be like a 10 on the freakout scale. I think 6 is more like cautiously optimistic, but nervous enough to have a rational discussion about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. Because there are issues. There are real issues on this defense. It's a blend of personnel and scheme, and I think like inexperience at in the position of the decision makers, mostly Kerry Combs. But I don't know if all of it's fundamentally broken, and I don't know if in the end it's the thing that's going to keep Ohio State from winning a national championship this year. But it's worth like it's bad. It, like the 491 passing yards that Indiana had on Saturday. In a 42-35 Ohio State win, by the way, were shocking. Like I thought that Indiana would do some of that stuff. I didn't think they would have. I think it was 5 passes of 50 yards or more, 4 passes of 50 yards or more, more passes of 50 yards or more than Ohio State's defense allowed all of last year.
In one. Yeah, yeah, I'm with you on that. And the whole thing, really, when you like look at all this stuff, is. Ohio State's offense, I think, only scored one touchdown for most of the second half, too. So, did it, you know, and the whole thing for me going into the game was how can Ohio State's offense be stopped? And they got stopped. And I don't know. It took the worst game of Justin Fields' college career to make this an interesting dynamic in a game that people had to hold their breath, even if they were, again, one of the situations where I never felt like they were in danger of losing, but still. But also, there seems to be some personnel issues that I'll get into the secondary. And if they bring that defense with that defense into the Clemson game that we think is going to happen here pretty soon, I think it's going to get ugly. So, not ugly in the sense that Ohio State would lose 63-10, but I don't know how much Ohio State fans want to try to win a game 55-51 in a championship game, because I don't think Ohio State's defense is equipped to stop anybody right now.
Yeah, so it comes at an interesting time. The playoff rankings are going to be revealed on Tuesday, the first batch, and I think we'll share some thoughts on that at the end of this episode. But let's dig in a little bit on some of the red flags that popped up against Indiana. Personnel, like you said, but let's start with Kerry Combs. There was some like I think a lot of it is overboard because it's so early. He's 4 games into this, but I like get where you're coming from when you watch a performance like that. Is there any concern on your end that he's in over his head?
No, I mean, in over his head is something that I think you need multiple weeks of general incompetence to say, and I don't think he's anywhere near that. I think Ohio State's had some breakdowns in terms of miscommunications. There was one big play where a corner thought they were playing zone and they were playing man, and it turned into a 45-yard gain. And it's like stuff like that doesn't really alarm me because they're kids and stuff happens. The thing I want to know is whether or not this Ohio State team and the discussion of ruthlessness has what it takes to consider a new defensive lineup in the secondary. Because Marcus Hooker is overly aggressive and out of position, and I don't know if these are things that are all mental for him or if it's all physical. I don't know what it is, but it seems to me that there's a common denominator with some of these big plays and something that has to be done about that. Now, the mark of a true defensive coordinator, A, is good enough to fix those issues if they are mental and they're all schematic, or B, has to have the balls to change the way things are from a lineup standpoint if somebody can't get it done. So, you know, the ruthless discussion that we have about Ohio State is always fun, and Ryan Day has shown an ability to make tough decisions and not hurt feelings, and to hurt feelings if it depends on, you know, how things go. I think we'll be very interested to see how they react to this, because the problem here, Bill, is that this could now be a issue that we put under wraps. They stick with the same lineup. Ohio State's playing overmatched opponents for the next six, you know, three games into the Big Ten championship game. I don't even know if Northwestern, the team that we're presumably going to have to talk about in terms of who Ohio State's opponent is, can expose them any better than Indiana did. And then you walk into the playoff with this idea that things are fine, and then they're really not.
Yeah.
So the thing that I want to know and kind of watch is, are there going to be a lineup? Is there going to be a lineup adjustment? And you had an interesting tweet about how there's two holes in the secondary and Josh Proctor can only fix one of them. Why don't you take us through that tweet, that thought process, and from an X's and O's standpoint, what you think is schematically off with this team?
I will do that. First of all, you make a really good point about what this might look like the next 3 weeks and what that might actually mean, because we've seen that before. Remember in 2016, the offense was terrible, and then it's like, oh, they put 62 on Nebraska, they put 62 on Maryland, and we're like, oh, we're good to go, fix. And then they went into the playoff and didn't score against Clemson. So Illinois is bad. Michigan State is bad. Michigan is bad. It's very possible that Ohio State's defense looks like it has things fixed over the next 3 weeks or trending in the right direction over the next 3 weeks. And I'm not saying dismiss that offhand. But sort of take it with a grain of salt, I think. I think you got to like really dig down and be analytical about it and almost digging into minutia a little bit to see if it is better. Like, why is it better? Because simply having better statistics is not going to mean much when they're playing the teams they're about to play. Kerry Combs, I'll start with the schematic stuff. Kerry Combs, I think, is struggling a little bit with knowing what his players do well or the positions that they should be in. I don't think, like, comparing it to 2018, I don't think this is quite the same thing, because I thought that defense had like underlying structural issues that were manipulated by opposing offenses who like used Ohio State's rules against it to gain an advantage. And I don't really think that's what's happening here. I just think sometimes they have the wrong play called. And case in point, the play you were talking about, Taraja Mitchell is in the game for Pete Werner. Fine, put Taraja Mitchell in the game. He's out wide, and he has a responsibility to cover a running back wide receiver hybrid all the way out extended toward the sideline. And on top of that, he has the wrong call. So he plays zone, everyone else is playing man, and the guy runs behind him. Like, Taraja Mitchell should not be in that position. Happened later in the game with Baron Browning on the touchdown they scored on fourth down. Baron Browning, very similar situation, is spread out wide on the same player, hybrid wide receiver running back. They run a pick play. Baron Browning has no chance. And Marcus Hooker, on top of that, makes a mistake in the back end, and there's no relief valve there to make up for Baron Browning's mistake. So, like, don't put your linebackers in man coverage on the sideline, I think, is, like, step one. But beyond that, and the personnel stuff you're talking about, Marcus Hooker is having a hard time. And it's hard, like, it's difficult for me sometimes to be, like, very pointed in criticism of unpaid athletes, but, you know, we all watch the game and we see what happens. So I think Josh Proctor is an answer for either spot in the secondary that's been a problem right now, whether that's free safety or the slot corner position where he's been rotating with Marcus Williamson. The fact that Marcus Hooker started this year when we thought Josh Proctor would leads me to believe that maybe Josh Proctor was not great in that role in practice, but I'm willing to give him a shot at free safety in a game because what they're doing right now doesn't work. But that only answers one of your problems. And I don't, like, if he's free safety and Marcus Williamson is your full-time slot corner, I still think that slot corner spot's a problem, because with some of the things they're doing with that position where they want to bump that guy back and he wants to play split safeties, coverages, like, I think Marcus Williamson struggles with that. And the depth at both of those positions is a bunch of freshmen or redshirt freshmen. And I'm not saying they can't be the answer. I would like to see them try, but it's not like a Brendan White situation, you know, like in 2018 where Brendan White was, I guess, a little more experienced and came in and did well. Like, there's nobody like that behind these guys. It's just like you thinking that Legend Cavazos was going to be good or Cam Martinez is going to be good. And I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's putting a lot of faith in a guy or guys who have never played before.
Well, here's the thing. Multiple times in the past 10 years, Ohio State has had the hole in the secondary, and multiple times they've put a freshman into that spot or a redshirt freshman into that spot late in the season, whether it be a playoff game or in the Big Ten championship game, and it exploded. So, mm-hmm. like, if a guy like Cam Martinez or Legend Cavazos is the answer to this, it has to happen soon, because it's not one of these things where, okay, throw him out on the field against Clemson and good luck. And, you know, that kind of was the case last year with Proctor a little bit. He played some, but not a ton. Not enough to be in the position that Ohio State is counting on him in the biggest game of the year. And guess what? It was exposed.
He got exploited.
And, yep. and that's kind of how this is, you know, a delicate discussion on how to win a national championship. And, you know, I think a lot of times, and we did this year and we'll continue to do this, but Ohio State has such good personnel that it's so easy to gloss over preseason questions as things that will just get fixed. And I saw a lot of tweeting about Alabama gave up 50 to Ole Miss, SEC is tough. Ohio State gives up 35 to Indiana and their team sucks. And it's like, that's fine if you want to pretend like nothing's wrong here, because it's easy to do that. But there is an issue here. Is it fixable? Absolutely. But if it's a personnel problem, then personnel problems aren't fixable. You try to mask them the best that you can. I think that a team can win with some personnel problems when you have an offense like Ohio State's that can score 40 or 50 points in a game. But personnel issues are deep, glaring issues that will be. And it's not a matter of if, it's when they will be exposed when you start playing teams with elite-level quarterbacks. And I'm not saying that Penix isn't one of them. You start playing against Trevor Lawrence, you start playing against Mac Jones, you start playing against Kyle Trask, it's going to be raining back there. And, you know, whatever is the issue, this isn't kind of like, it's one bad game, it's no problem, they were up 35-7. Okay, so part of me thinks that. But part of me thinks, hey, we have to address this discussion because it's an important aspect of whether or not this team can win a national championship. Winning the Big Ten, they'll walk through it. I think they'll have their way with Northwestern with the same level of analysis that we have with this Indiana game. Do I think they can beat Clemson right now? I don't.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say that just based off, like, if the offense had played better, I think maybe I'd feel differently about that. But with Justin Fields coming off his worst game, that was like his play was really bizarre. We can talk about that in a minute, but I think I'm with you. Like, I think I said last week that I still would pick Ohio State to win the national championship. It's not that I no longer think they're or that I think they're incapable now. I certainly think they can still win it, but I would back off of that a little bit because, and people can get mad at me for this, but I guess I wasn't appreciating enough just how bad things were on the back end. Although I will say this, like, I always hesitate to do this because I don't want it to come off as me making excuses. And Ryan Day did this, and I like kind of rolled my eyes at it. He's like, if you take away the big plays, like, you know, we had a good game. I was like, no shit. there were five plays of 30 yards or more, and then the rest of the game, Indiana averaged 3.5 yards per play. And I don't tell people that to say, like, just ignore the bad stuff and only look at the good stuff. But I think that to me, if it's like five breakdowns led to five huge plays, that makes me believe that it's a little more fixable than I think people might be willing to admit right now. I get, like, watching that happen to your team sucks, but I really do think there are some answers to this, and it starts with exploring personnel changes, and that's where the schedule, I think, is kind of Ohio State's friend. It's like, I think you can mess around a little bit when you go in to play Illinois this week. So let's assume for a second they're going to experiment with personnel a little bit. What would you like to see them do on the back end of the defense in terms of working new guys? And how, like, what's the ideal situation look like for you?
I feel like sometimes I'm kind of like fans in the sense that I get excited about highly recruited players. And I would like to see what one of them have. But I don't know if that's the right thing because I'm not a coach and I'm not in practice every day. And the thing that we discussed about Legend Cavazos is, he's a hell of an athlete, but I don't know that he is not raw enough to be in that position. And Cam Martinez, whether or not he was the most underrated player in 2020 or not, was a three-star prospect. And there's no Von Bell sitting in the wings waiting. Right. I think that it seems clear to me that Josh Proctor should be in the game much more. And I know that he does have a pretty large role and he's in there situationally, but I think that he should be the new safety that they build this team around. And in terms of the other high safety or however else you want to, you know, get the alignment of this defense, I think that you need to consider finding a new defensive back, whether it be a freshman or somebody who hasn't played all that much. Maybe give Marcus Williamson a bigger shot for a different alignment. I don't know. You're the coach on this podcast, not me. I just know that I can diagnose the issue. I don't know that I would be the perfect person to ask how to fix it.
Well, the only thing we're basing this off of is like what we thought of guys as recruits, because that's the only kind of player we have to talk about right now. They really miss Cam Brown. Like that Cam Brown injury when he went down against Penn State is way more impactful now than I first realized when it happened. Because if he were healthy, I think the answer is he plays the slot and Josh Proctor plays free safety. And Marcus Williamson, I think, would be a little better suited to be like the extra guy in when you're playing nickel. But they don't really have that luxury now because Cam Brown's out. I think as much of a problem as it was against Clemson and for as bad as he looked in that game, I think I would like to see Josh Proctor get a shot at free safety. And if you put him there, he's super athletic. The thing about Josh Proctor is he's super athletic. He's very explosive. And I don't think you'd put him back there and he'd be flawless. I think if you put him back there, he's going to make some mistakes, probably some mistakes that look a lot like the mistakes that Marcus Hooker's making. But I also think that Josh Proctor is fast enough and athletic enough that he's going to erase some of those mistakes. And, like, it's, again, I hesitate to knock Marcus Hooker the way we're doing it, but we got to be honest. If Marcus Hooker makes a mistake, he's not fast enough to make up for it. If a guy gets behind him, that guy's gone. And I think Josh Proctor, we've seen it already. Like, Josh Proctor can chase down plays. And you might think, like, well, if a guy gets a 60-yard gain and you tackle him inside the 5-yard line, what difference does that make? Like, it's harder. We saw Indiana fumble inside the 5-yard line on Saturday. It happens. It's hard to score when you get in a short red area. And Josh Proctor, I think, is a guy that can chase some of those plays down and is willing to do so. So I'd like to see him get a shot at free safety. And then maybe you rotate a little bit with Marcus Williamson. Cam Martinez, I guess, would be the guy I wouldn't mind seeing. We haven't seen him at all. Ryan Day keeps mentioning Legend Cavazos. I don't know why that is. Sometimes coaches do that because guys are flashing. Sometimes coaches do that just to make guys feel good about themselves and be happy. I don't know what it is with Legend because we haven't seen him play a snap of college football yet. But if Ryan Day is going to keep talking about him, then why not try to throw him into a game against Illinois? And if he went the other way and just played Josh Proctor full-time in Marcus Williamson's spot, the guy who was the free safety with the second team defense and pregame warmups on Saturday was Ronnie Hickman. And Ronnie Hickman's interesting because I think if Ronnie had not gotten hurt at the end of his high school career, he would have been ranked in the top 100 prospects coming out of high school. And then if you had a guy with that profile on your roster who has not played yet, I think he'd be the kind of guy fans will be clamoring for to get on the field. But because his ranking fell a little bit, they're not. But I don't know. Give Ronnie Hickman a shot on the back end. Give Lathan Ransom a shot on the back end. These are two guys who are borderline top 100 prospects. And Marcus Hooker's not getting it done. So, explore all your avenues. When you're playing a team like Illinois, you're favored by 30.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just do it as soon as possible. And do you think that the injury to Cam Brown, which was certainly a devastating blow when it happened, is a devastating blow in every sense of the word?
Yeah, it really is. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I was surprised that it seemed so clear to them that Seven Banks was the guy to play ahead of him at the other outside corner spot, because Seven Banks has had his own struggles too. He's not been quite as bad as Marcus Hooker has been, or even as Marcus Williamson has been at times, but Seven's struggling a little bit. And I'm not so sure that maybe Cam Brown wouldn't have been the candidate. Maybe something happened in the offseason and he had a lingering injury or something that didn't get him on the field from the jump, but he'd be a guy. They're very thin there, so he'd be a guy that would provide you some answers and some versatility, and the fact that they don't have him, and the only other upperclassman that is even available is Tyreek Johnson, who can't get on. If he can't, Tyreek Johnson's not getting on the field now, then like when's he ever going to get on the field? So then it's just all those freshmen we've been talking about.
And Ohio State's not supposed to be in a position where it has to rely on true freshmen, but if and when it has to, you know, a guy like Lathan Ransom, who was a pure safety in high school and was rated the way he was, it strikes me as a guy that I would want to see in the game. And, you know, that's part of the way it works when you play at Ohio State. You do the best that you can, and if you don't match up to what the expectation is, there's six people behind you that can take that spot. And against Indiana, Illinois, that's the great time to find out what you got back
there. Yeah, it does in an odd way set up well for them. I just don't know. what's your gut tell you? Like, when this happened in 2018 and there was deficient safety play, the only reason, if I'm not mistaken, Brendan White got into the game is because I think Jordan Fuller had to sit out for a targeting penalty. Otherwise, I'm not sure if Brendan White would have gotten on there. And he kind of shored things up a little bit, was MVP of the Rose Bowl. What's your confidence level that they're going to do an honest assessment of this and make a change?
50%.
Yeah. I have a hard time going much higher. I just don't know. Like, ruthless Ryan Day, we've seen it in recruiting. In the way he builds his quarterback room, I think in the way he calls plays, he's very aggressive. I don't know if we've seen it in personnel decisions just yet, but I think now he needs to be, because that free safety position's a problem.
Yeah. And the thing that I sometimes wonder, too, is that if there's such a clear deficiency to us, how and why it's so hard for the coaches who are in this scenario every single day. You know, it's either this is just the life that you have to live with because this is the best you got, or there's a misevaluation happening. And if you are sitting back talking about how great the coaching staff is 100% of the time, like we do and everybody else does, then to me, it makes me wonder if Ohio State has a personnel problem. And if you have a personnel problem at a place that's recruited this well, it just goes to show you how hard this game is and how tough it is to build a roster. Because you're one injury away. And truth of the matter is, Sean Wade isn't playing all that great either this year. And I know he had a pick six, and he high-stepped into the end zone, and it was a great moment for him. I'm happy for him and his family. He's not playing nearly as well as they thought that he would.
He is having a real issue in one-on-one scenarios, and it's interesting. He's a big, I thought physical corner, but he's big. He's got really good length, but he seems to have a problem. I don't know if he has like a play strength problem or it's a technique problem where when those jump ball situations happen, he is in the wrong spot. He's kind of in the right spot, but he's always behind the guy and he's always falling backwards. And it's like, why are you falling backwards? I don't, and he said it when we talked to him 2 weeks ago, and the way he answered the questions, I thought to myself, like, okay, I think he understands it. But then they had the last touchdown that Indiana scored was Ty Freifogel basically just running a fade, and Michael Penix throws it up for grabs, and Ty Freifogel wins. And there was some grabbing there. I think they were both grabbing. I don't really think it was pass interference on anybody. But Sean Wade thought it was offensive pass interference, and they kind of went to the ground and gave up. Marcus Hooker saw the flag on the ground and kind of gave up and like pointed to the flag, and it ends up being on Sean Wade. There's a lack of physicality on the ball with the secondary, and there's too much physicality when they're trying to make tackles and not wrapping people up. There's like a disconnect between those two things. It's like you're aggressive when you're not supposed to be, and you're passive when you're not supposed to be. And I don't know why that's happening with this group.
Yeah. I didn't think that we would be at this point in the season and have so many head-scratching things. And speaking of which, it might be a nice transition to talk about the worst game of Justin Fields' career, whether or not he's still the front runner to win the Heisman, and what the hell he was doing out there.
He's not the front runner in the Heisman. I actually took him off my Heisman straw poll.
I put him from first to third.
I thought that was a bad enough performance in a big enough game that I took him off.
Yeah. Do you think that he's off permanently?
No. Well, they don't have much in the way of marquee games saying. The rest of the way. I guess he can light it up the rest of the year. And like the Michigan game's not a big game because Michigan stinks, but a lot of people will still be watching and then they'll have the Big Ten championship. So I don't think he's eliminated entirely. But I also, when you look at Mac Jones, Kyle Trask, I put Breece Hall from Iowa State on mine this year. Zach Wilson.
I almost put Desmond Ridder on mine.
Yeah, I think someone else has been putting him on his too. I actually didn't watch the Cincinnati UCF game.
He's a really good player.
Yeah, he is good. I took Justin off, and maybe I get like a little wild with that poll sometimes because it doesn't mean anything.
It's just fine. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was his three interceptions. The first one, his explanation didn't make any sense because he said he thought it was – they had a call like it was going to be a two-high coverage, and then they rolled to a one-high coverage. But if you watch the play, like there was a safety in the middle of the field 10 seconds before the ball was snapped. Like that was single-high coverage all the way. And Justin, I think, threw it – there actually was an opening to throw the ball to Garrett Wilson. Justin just threw it late, and then he threw it poorly, and he led Garrett Wilson right into the safety. And he also didn't use his eyes. Like that's the one thing – if there's anything I'd love to see Justin Fields improve on, it is manipulate second level defenders with his eyes. He still doesn't do a good job of that, and he did a terrible job of it on that play. But that was one play. The second one, he was just trying to throw it away, and he didn't throw it far enough. He should have made the decision to throw it away sooner. The third one was, I actually thought, the most problematic, because if you go back and watch it, there's pressure coming, but it's actually blocked really well. And Justin has a very clean pocket, and the play is developing in front of him, and Julian Fleming is going to come open. And we saw Justin Fields do this last year, and we hadn't seen him really do it this year up until this point, where he pulled the ball down way too early and started trying to run when there was no reason for him to do that. I don't know if he was seeing ghosts or he thought, like, I'm going to use my legs to make a play, but like, that was a quarterback who I thought was shook a little bit. And I never thought that we'd see Justin Fields, like the version of Justin Fields we saw for the first three games of this season. I didn't think that guy was capable of being shook, and I thought Indiana rattled him a little bit.
Yeah, which is crazy, too, is because we were talking about, well, what would have to happen in this game for Ohio State to be in a position where they could lose? And I think you specifically said Justin Fields would have to play uncharacteristically bad and turn the ball over in ways that we haven't seen him turn the ball over, and that's kind of what happened.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. What's crazy is that they turned the ball over three times and Indiana didn't score off any of them.
And hasn't their whole thing been that they
that's well
score
they've done.
A ton of touchdowns off of turnovers?
On short fields, yeah. Like it didn't, like, I guess kudos to Ohio State's defense. I think one happened because they dropped the ball on fourth down. But otherwise, like, Ohio State's defense in sudden change situations was actually pretty good. It was when the game was a blowout and they were playing soft coverage and they couldn't match up. But no, the Justin Fields stuff was weird. He was in a bad mood after the game, as you might expect. It's kind of strange because he still had 300 passing yards. He had two touchdowns. I thought he ran the ball pretty well. I also thought, like, Justin didn't play well. I thought that might have been Ryan Day's worst game as a play caller.
Too cute, not running enough?
Not running. Like, the run game was rolling, like, way more than we've seen it roll in any game this year. But they had been so good at these play action passes where they get Fields out of the pocket and they boot him out, and like, they weren't doing that stuff, but they also were, like, Indiana blitzed. This is from Pro Football Focus. I think I have this right. I think Indiana blitzed. It was like 31 out of 42 dropbacks. It was almost 80% of the time Indiana blitzed, which is nuts. And I think it was Master Teague afterwards, just like, I never played in the game where teams blitz that much. It was pretty insane how much they were blitzing, but it was also expected because that was their only chance of throwing this offense out of rhythm. And Ryan Day, I thought, stubbornly so, kept calling those long, developing, down-the-field play-action shots to Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, where, like, they just weren't going to have the time to do it. Like, maybe there were a couple where they had the time and Fields made the wrong read or held it too long or whatever, but all in all, I thought those were the wrong kind of play calls against that style of defense, and they would have been really well served with a lot of quick game, a lot of screens. And they did it a little bit, but not nearly enough. And I thought, like, the offense had 607 yards, and they scored 35 points. So this probably sounds crazy given that, but I thought they left a lot of opportunities on the field because of Ryan Day's play calling. Like, he never seemed to adjust, maybe because he felt like he didn't have to. But I would have liked to see him have a better feel for the game and call some different stuff, because I didn't think he was putting his quarterback in the best positions.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, Bill, is that for the most part of that game, it was a complete and utter dumpster fire for Indiana.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
they finished with -1 rushing yards.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State, when they went up 35-7, you know, I was texting friends telling you, I told you to lay the 20. This is a joke. You're going to win 55-17. You're not even going to have to sweat.
That's what it looked like.
And that's what it was, you know. And one big play turned into two big plays, turned into three big plays. And, you know, you put yourself in a position where you're having this discussion. So I don't think there's any part of me that thinks that Northwestern could beat Ohio State. I know that that's like the inkling. I saw some chatter on Twitter and, you know, people saying, well, if they don't really get their act together, then Northwestern's more legit than you think they are. And, you know, I don't know. I think they're going to walk into the playoff no problem. What I don't know is whether or not I still view them as the favorite to win the national championship, which I think might be a nice segue into playoff discussion. No?
Yeah.
Or too
I think
soon.
We can get there. No,
you're
no,
the
no.
Host,
I think
man.
We can get there. I was just trying to think. Like, I was gonna say we've seen this version of Northwestern before, because it's the team that Ohio State played in the 2018 Big Ten championship. I guess his defense is a little better. But that, like, we know, like, Northwestern gets competent quarterback play, they're gonna be a pretty solid team because they play defense so well and they're well coached. And as long as they can stay on schedule, move the ball, and score three or four touchdowns, they're going to be in pretty good shape every week. I don't think that's the team that has the athletes. No offense, because I know they got bothered by what Joey Galloway said about them this week. And Joey Galloway was out of bounds, I thought, a little bit. But they don't have the athletes to compete with Ohio State. So I wouldn't worry about that. Before we talk about the playoff, I wanted to ask you a question. Oh, so I think people are rightfully concerned about the defense moving forward. Based off what you saw yesterday, do you have any concerns about the offense moving forward? Or do you just think it was a weird off game for Justin Fields?
I am concerned about the offense's running attack still. After the best running game that they've had, and that didn't go away for me, despite the fact that Teague has still been very good. I don't think that the passing attack is something that I would concern myself with yet. I think it was weird. I think the interceptions were weird. If it happens again, then you start worrying about it. I think weird games happen. He's a college kid. He's human. You know, all the things. I don't know that I am really that far off of Justin Fields as otherworldly good. And I think that you'd have to, like, second guess how good you think he is if you wanted to worry about the passing game, and I think it's premature to do that. I think that the biggest questions about this team are the biggest questions about this team coming into the weekend. It's just they're more – one wasn't glaring at all. One was actually an improvement in the running game, and one was a disaster.
I think Justin needs to be a little more willing to take checkdowns. And that was something I think he struggled with last year too, and then seemed to get better with over the course of the year. I mostly think he had been playing so well, completing 80% of his passes, or almost 90% of his passes, hadn't thrown an interception, like was basically doing whatever he wanted against three teams that weren't very good. And then he played a fairly competent defense that was like going crazy, blitzing him and pressuring him. And he thought, you know, like, I'm going to make plays. And he put himself in some tough spots. I think if you go back, and I'm going to do this later in a week, like a little bit of a film study on the pressure they're allowing, why they're allowing it, and like what they can do to mitigate it. But I think one easy one can be like, if you watch some of those plays, the tight end is just there, like dump it down to the tight end for 5 yards. You don't have to throw the ball to Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson on every single play. And I think he's caught in that a little bit right now.
Well, because they're so open all the time.
But they weren't. I guess that's true. They are open.
They were pretty open. Yeah.
And I would throw the ball to them too. But I think it's like those two guys have like 60% of his targets right now. Maybe it's more than that. And that's okay. I think that's fine. But in this particular game, I felt he was looking for those guys a little too much when there were easy yards available if he would just check it down to a tight end or throw the crosser to Julian Fleming earlier, give it to Jamison Williams a little bit more. I think he's got to build some more trust with his other weapons. Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson make things go, and they're going to be what ultimately decides whether or not they're going to win a championship or not. But Justin Fields would benefit himself and the offense greatly if he shows teams he's willing to spray it around a little bit and involve some other guys.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Okay, playoff talk.
Yep.
First playoff rankings come out on Tuesday. The playoff committee on Sunday – I think I should share this before we talk about it. Went out of its way to release a document of frequently asked rankings questions. And the first question was, how will the first selection committee ranking consider the disparity in the number of games between top teams? By November 24th, Clemson, for example, is scheduled to have played 9 games, while Oregon is scheduled to have played 3. And Ohio State, obviously, has played 4. The answer to that question was there's no minimum game requirement to be eligible for the college football playoff. The selection committee's job is to select the top 4 teams beginning November 24th and continuing through the final rankings on December 20th. The number of games and wins by each team is certainly important in weighing its ranking, but it is not the only factor. And I took that as prepare yourself for Ohio State and Oregon to be in the top 10 on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I think that's good. I think that the teams who should be in the top 10 on Tuesday are the teams that have done what they can within their own control to put themselves in a position to be thought of as alive in the playoff hunt. And the rankings, I guess, are quasi supposed to be an indication of how good teams are in order, because that's what rankings are. But I also look at the playoff a little bit differently. I look at the playoff as the teams with the highest probability of potentially making the playoff. Can those two things be different? It's like Oregon might not be as good as even a Cincinnati, or might not even be as good as a Florida, but I wouldn't be opposed to the idea of them being ranked ahead of those teams in the initial college football playoff
rankings, despite the fact that they're 2-0, and despite the fact they almost lost to UCLA on Saturday, because they might have a higher probability at the end of the discussion to make the playoff. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Oregon will be in the back end of the 10, or the back end of the top 10. I think USC might be in the back end of the top 10 or top 12, and Indiana, with one loss, might actually be ranked higher. I think the committee's going to like Indiana. But to me, I think that this ranking, and the way that I would do it if I were making my own rankings, is which teams have the best chance to make it or are the best teams in position to make it. And there is a lot of dreck in the top 15, and there's only really, what, 7 or 8 teams that actually have a real chance of making it?
Yeah. 7, 8, I mean,
10,
I
just to round it out, maybe?
Yeah, like 9 or 10, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess the obvious question here, Bill, is do you want to go down and reveal our top four the way we want, the way we think it should be, or the way we think it's going to be?
Let's do both to see if there's any discrepancy there. I'll go for, because there's really only one small difference. If I were ranking it, I think I'd put Notre Dame first, because I do think that they have the best win in the country and they're undefeated, and I understand that DJ Uiagalelei played in that game and Trevor Lawrence did it. DJ's really good. Like, DJ is probably like one of the 10 best quarterbacks in college football. He just happens to be a backup right now because he's behind the best quarterback in college football. But that wasn't like a pushover because Trevor Lawrence didn't play. DJ threw for like 400 yards in that game. So that is a very legitimate win in my mind, and I think it's the best win anybody has. So I'd put Notre Dame 1, Alabama 2, Ohio State 3, and Clemson 4. But I think it's actually going to be Alabama 1, Notre Dame 2, Ohio State 3, and Clemson 4.
That's what it's going to be, and I want to ask you this. Do you think Notre Dame's win over Clemson is more impressive than cumulative body of work from Alabama?
Yep. I don't know if I agree with that. I think I err toward like best win. All other things being equal, I think I err toward best win this early in the process, and then at the end of it, like with Alabama, which has beaten Texas A&M and Georgia, and will get at least one other quality win against whoever it plays in the SEC championship, would have a stronger argument. I don't know. I also don't do the thing where I just assume like teams are solid because they're from the SEC. Like, I don't know. Like, Texas A&M is the combination of playing Texas A&M and Georgia like better than playing Clemson? I don't know if it is.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm just – I just don't know if I'm with you on – DJ Uiagalelei is very good. I'm not with you on the fact that it's not, I mean, that it's fine and everything was normal. Like, Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, man. Like, I know that.
I'm
like,
not saying it's the same thing, but I don't think there's enough of a drop off between the two that you just dismiss that win.
Oh, I'm not dismissing it. I think that it's depleted. And if Texas,
do you think it's not the best win in college football?
I don't know. I guess right now on paper it is, because it's the highest ranked team to lose. So
I guess you could also factor into, like, Clemson was down.
They had like three defensive linemen out for that game. Right? Yeah, and like, yeah. Notre Dame was able to run over them. And the thing about this that I'm excited about is that we're going to get to see them play again probably. So
right.
I don't know. It kind of sucks for Notre Dame because beating the same team twice in the same season is impossible anyway, just because it's just a tough thing to do. But, you know, Texas A&M beat Florida, and I, given the fact that Florida is what it is right now, that might be one of the more impressive wins in college football. I think you put that in there. And,
that's a good one.
You know, Alabama undressed Texas A&M. So, 52-24. So, you know, I don't know if we're splitting hairs a little bit. Maybe we are, and we'll get the answers to the questions that we're getting. But I think that Ohio State should be 3 and will be 3. In terms of who's number 1 and number 2, it's going to be a big deal for one of them at the end of the year. But right now, like we know, as things continue to be released and context and wins continue to pile up, we'll have a better context of how things should be in 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Yeah, I do think it'll be at Bama Notre Dame, and if that's the case, and I think that's fine. I think I've actually kind of talked myself out of Notre Dame being number one now in the last 5 minutes. If Notre Dame plays Clemson in the ACC championship and beats them again, I think they'll be number one. And Bama
over Bama?
Two. Yeah, I think if they beat full strength Clemson in the ACC championship game, I think they would be. Beating Clemson twice in 1 year, I don't like. Even if you factor in that Clemson was shorthanded in the first game, like beating that team twice in 1 year is pretty impressive.
Yeah,
I think more impressive. Like I don't. Georgia is fine. The problem with Georgia is like JT Daniels looked really good this week, and they might start to turn things around and become a pretty good team. But I would hope that people understand in the end that like that's not the team that Alabama beat. If that's a team moving forward that has competent, good, or borderline good quarterback play, or even something better than that, that's not the team that Alabama beat. But I don't know if the people in that room will think of things that way.
Well, let's go down the list of teams that are still alive in the playoff. Alabama's alive, right?
Yes.
Notre Dame's alive.
Yep.
Ohio State's alive.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson's alive.
Mm-hmm.
Florida's alive. Texas A&M, we were talking about this on a Google podcast that we did to promote this podcast, and I said Texas A&M's alive. I don't know that they are, actually.
They're in an interesting spot. Like, would they be alive if they don't lose the rest of the way and are a one-loss team that doesn't play in its conference championship game because it lost to Florida?
It's like the only thing that they can hope is that Alabama beats the crap out of Florida in the SEC and they were fortunate enough to not have to play a big game, so they get to go into as the fourth spot.
Right.
Like, I just feel like walking in that way is such a Bush League way of doing it. Especially considering the fact that in your biggest game, I mean, I guess your second biggest game, or you had two big games. You beat Florida, you get credit for that. But when you played Alabama, you lost by 100. Like, I don't know. It's not a very compelling case for me. So I think technically they're still alive, Bill. Yeah. I just wouldn't put them in.
They have three games left. LSU, who stinks. Auburn, who's currently ranked, but plays Alabama this week. And Tennessee. So if Auburn upsets Alabama in the Iron Bowl this week, and then Texas A&M were to come back around and beat Auburn, then that becomes an impressive win for them, too. So they'd be alive. They're alive. Yeah,
they're alive. Cincinnati is alive, technically.
Yep.
BYU's alive.
BYU, by the way, according to our buddy Bruce Feldman, the Apple Cup this week was canceled, I think, because of some stuff going on at Washington State. And Washington, as we recorded this on Sunday night, is looking at maybe scheduling BYU.
I hope that that happens.
Yeah, me too.
Oregon is alive at 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern is alive at 5-0. USC is alive at 3-0, and I think that's it.
Yeah, Miami is not. Did you say Northwestern, who's still unbeaten, technically?
That means they're 11.
Yeah, everyone else has two losses.
I didn't count Coastal Carolina because I don't think they are.
Go Fancy Chickens. Marshall's undefeated still. Wisconsin has the one loss, but they need help now that they've lost to Northwestern to get to the Big Ten championship. And I don't really think Wisconsin's alive.
No, they're not.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Tulsa?
I don't know. I think it's those 11
over the weekend.
Yeah, that was great. Pretty crazy stuff happened in that game, but
yeah,
you know,
no, 11 teams, and that's like really stretching it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and more that includes it's like five or six.
That
teams.
Includes two group of five teams,
right?
And also in that group of teams that are still alive, there's still like five head to head matchups amongst those teams. So you know it's kind of getting now to the point where a lot of these teams are just going to waltz into the playoff. But I don't know who the fourth team is.
I think it'll be Clemson, right, on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean Clemson will be number four.
Is there any chance they put a Florida or A&M in that spot?
Yeah, of course.
I guess that wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, the problem about it is that Clemson hasn't played in like a month. So,
yeah.
Have they even played? They haven't played since they lost to Notre Dame. So, like, the last piece of information that you have about Clemson is a loss. So, it would not surprise me if Florida, you know, were to move into that spot, especially now that they're sitting at 6-1, their only loss, as much as their, you know, schedule still has, I mean, I guess the marquee win for Florida is Georgia, but they've lost to Texas A&M. They've got the best loss. No, actually Clemson has the best loss. They just don't have any quality wins. So I'm very curious to see more so than anything, how this committee ranks teams that haven't played very many games.
Yeah, Clemson's win of note is Miami, which hasn't lost since it lost to Clemson, but it also really hasn't played anybody because the ACC is pretty bad. Miami, since losing to Clemson, has beat Pittsburgh, Virginia, NC State, and Virginia Tech. Had its game this week against Georgia Tech postponed. So I don't know. Miami is top 10 in the AP poll. I don't know if Miami is going to be top 10 in the playoff rankings. So that might ding the quality of Clemson's best win a little bit. And certainly, even if that is Clemson's best win, like A&M's best win is better than Clemson's best win.
Yeah.
And Florida, I think Florida's best win is probably better than Clemson's best win, right? Georgia's better than Miami.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, I think it's possible that Clemson is not among the top four.
Well, let me ask you one more that we didn't ask, Bill. Is Oklahoma alive?
I don't think so. Not with two losses. I know they've played well lately, and their defense looks to have things in shape a little bit, and they won Bedlam. But Oklahoma State, I don't think, was as good as people were making it out to be either. So I don't know. I don't think they're alive. I guess they could be helped by a little bit of chaos. They beat an okay Texas team in overtime, and they beat an overrated Oklahoma State team in their rivalry game. They crushed them, but I don't think they're alive. Do you?
I don't. I think it'll be something fun to yell about. I don't think that there's actually an application to put them in. I would put one of those group of five teams in over BYU, especially if BYU goes out and beats Washington in that fake scenario that could happen. I don't know that Oklahoma has enough to do it, but it will be interesting because now Texas is back in the top 20 probably at a 5-2 clip and have won three in a row. You know, they didn't play Kansas this weekend. Who cares? They're playing Iowa State on Saturday. If you get these two teams, Oklahoma and Texas, playing for the Big 12 championship game, you might put yourself in a position where we can start trying to talk ourselves into the Big 12 being a real potential, you know, playoff contender. But I just don't know if two losses is a thing that's going to happen, especially, I guess, in a weird year like this. But maybe the weirdness is why it would. I have no idea. I think that they are 1% alive.
Yeah, I guess they're not totally dead, but I would not include them yet in the group we discussed previously unless some chaos happens for a two-loss team to actually be considered. I think you and I both agree that in an odd way, Ohio State is going to be helped by how tough Indiana played them because the committee is going to like Indiana. And I think Indiana, like at worst, is going to be like 11th or 12th. But I still think there's a chance that Indiana's in the top 10. Do you think there's any chance that Ohio State's not in the top four on Tuesday? And if so, like, what do you think the reasoning for that would be?
That would mean that a group of five team would be ranked ahead of them, or a one-loss team.
Yeah, like, would they?
I don't think there's a chance of that.
I don't think there is either. I think it's possible that Ohio State's fourth. But I'd be pretty shocked if they put one of these SEC teams that have played two or three more games in Ohio State and have a loss ahead of Ohio State.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely interesting to see in terms of extent of resume and how that kind of puts into perspective. I just don't know that there's any compelling case that you can make to put Ohio State outside of the top four, or how you could – I mean, it'd be a head-to-head matchup with Notre Dame. I mean, Clemson, right? And I don't know – coming off of a loss, if Clemson's best argument right now is that. So I don't think they'll be out of the top four. I think it's possible they could be four. I don't think Oregon, USC, or anybody else is going to be ranked ahead of them in terms of the Pac-12 undefeated teams. I think that three is basically like almost guaranteed in my mind.
What do you think the most frustrating part about the playoff reveal is that they like claim to be transparent without actually being transparent at all. And you get on the conference call with who's the chair this year, the Iowa AD, right? Gary Barta.
Yep.
He's new, so maybe he'll be different, but you try to ask questions to gain insight and you don't get any, you just get talking points that are vague. So if we can like try to step beyond that, like what do you think the discussion of Ohio State is going to be this week on Tuesday? Like among those people, do you think they're just going to say Ohio State is who they always are. They're very talented. They're most talented team in the Big Ten. They're a top three talented team in the country. They've been a little inconsistent, but like we trust them. Or can they look at Ohio State and say like, you know what, that team struggles to put teams away, and their defense looks very leaky, and I'm a little unsure about them in a way that could knock Ohio State down a peg or two when the rankings do come out on Tuesday night.
I think Ohio State is going to be one of the teams in the big boys club. And until they lose a game, I think it's going to be hard to get them out of there. I think that we are probably more critical of Ohio State than the committee is. I think that the people in the committee room might watch and see 35-7 and go, oh, who cares what happens at the end of those games? That, you know, they took their foot off the gas. I think it's very simple. If Ohio State is an unbeaten team and flashes that brilliance offensively, I don't think there's really anything that can take them out of the Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State club. And I don't even think Notre Dame's in that club. So, you know, I think that if people are on the committee are looking at defensive statistics and seeing that, you know, there's some leaking on the back end, or, you know, Ohio State has been allergic to blowing teams out, I guess that's all true. But I don't think we've seen very much evidence in the past, not even just with Ohio State, but other elite level teams, that they penalize teams for not winning sexy. I think that as long as they win and they look good doing it for the most part, and I think Ohio State did look good doing it for the most part until the end, they're still going to continue to be looked upon favorably.
What if Indiana falls off now? Indiana plays Maryland, Wisconsin, and Purdue, and a team to be determined later in that championship weekend. I think Indiana is very much a top 15 team. I think, like I said, they have a chance of being a top 10 team, and it has a chance to get a good win still against Wisconsin, at least I think in the eyes of the committee. But if, like, this was their Super Bowl and they lost kind of in heartbreaking fashion and they start having emotional letdowns and, like, drop one of these games, how detrimental is that to Ohio State's cause, given that the schedule's not very good?
You know, I don't think it is, Bill. I mean, if the question is how much does Ohio State need to rely on Indiana to be ranked high, I think that that's kind of funny. Here's the thing, and we talked about this a little bit. Being the number one seed is going to matter again, I think. Maybe it won't. I don't know. It seems right now that it will matter, because playing whoever that fourth team is going to be a nice little advantage, and Ohio State got a nice test, a taste of how important seeding can matter in the playoff last year. I just don't know, with Michigan being as bad as they are and Penn State being as bad as they are, if Ohio State has the tentpole game that we talked about last week to prop them up resume-wise, to put them in the number one spot if there's other unbeaten Power 5 teams.
Yeah.
You know, it might look nice, and maybe their path to being the number one seed is Florida beating Alabama in the SEC championship game and Clemson beating Notre Dame, so they're the only unbeaten team. But then at that point, they could still get matched up with Alabama or Florida in the first round of the game, and the seeding might not matter as much as it would. You know, what you want is Ohio State to be matched up with whatever overmatched fourth seed is as the number one seed, and I don't know if there's a path for that. So right now, to me, it seems like the way thing is setting up, Alabama runs the table. They're number one seed as the SEC unbeaten champ. And again, anything can happen, but that's the way it seems to be setting up right now. And then two Ohio State, or three Ohio State, will have to face whoever wins the ACC championship game in the first round of the playoff, and that will probably be Clemson, and you're like looking down the barrel of the gun again. And that's kind of like the way it seems to be setting up right now.
Yeah, it feels like we're on a Ohio State-Clemson semifinal collision course. It's not like a guarantee, but it feels like the most likely scenario, which I'd love to see those two teams play each other in a national championship, but I mostly just want to see them play again. And I think Ohio State wants to play them again. Although maybe shore up that defense a little bit before you get to that game. But I do think like that's the motivation for all these guys that came back this year. It's like they thought they were better than Clemson last year and they lost that game because of mistakes they made, and they think they were shorthanded by the officials as well. They want redemption against Clemson.
I think Ohio State's better than Clemson right now.
Do I think Ohio State is better than Clemson right now? Yeah. I think if they were meeting on a neutral field, I'd pick Ohio State to win right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that I'd beat. I think the only team I wouldn't pick them to beat is Alabama right now. And even they gave up 48 points to Ole Miss. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that all the teams that were in last year's playoff, I think maybe Alabama's a little bit better than they were last year. But I think Ohio State is worse than they were last year. And I think Clemson is worse than they were last year.
Yeah, I think that's all true. I also would not pick Ohio State to beat Alabama at the moment, but I can certainly have my mind change. But I don't think Trevor Lawrence is great. I don't think the skill, and Travis Etienne is great, but I think the skill on the outside, the stuff that really gives Ohio State problems,
it's not there right now.
Is not as dynamic at Clemson as it is at Alabama.
Also, I watched Notre Dame beat Clemson up and down the field on both sides of the ball in the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, they looked a little bit up front.
That to me, that's what translates, and
Clemson was missing a few guys and on the defensive line. I get it. But you know what travels, and travels is your ability to, you know, beat people up front. And right now, I'm not necessarily sure that's what's happening.
Yeah, and I actually thought, like, it'll sound crazy in a game where Justin Fields got sacked five times. I actually thought the offensive line wasn't that bad against Indiana. They were, it was some really tough spots against all that blitzing, and certainly had some breakdowns on those sacks. But the run blocking I thought was great, the best it's been all year. Granted, against an Indiana defensive line, that's not really anything to write home about. But I actually thought that that was probably the best the offensive line played all year. At least for a full game. They were really good in the first half against Penn State and not so much in the second half. But for a full four quarters, I thought that was like the most consistent they were over the course of four quarters. Which, like, I don't know. That might mean nothing against the Indiana defense. But I thought it was a step forward for them, a step forward for the running game, even if I think questions about that are still fair. Defense is interesting. But I'm not like so far gone that I think that this season's off the rails now because of the way the defense played against Indiana.
I agree with you. I listen, winning a national championship is putting yourself in a position to get on the field and see what happens. You know, I think Ohio State is basically a free pass on its way to the playoff. And then, you know, once they get matched up with whoever they're matched up, you know, you re-break it down and all that stuff. But, you know, in terms of, like, off the rails for the season, I think you go in optimistic still. You're optimistic that you have the personnel. You have the coaching staff that can put this team in the best position to win. And you have to feel good about the fact that this team is basically unbeatable. Well, they're going to be 28 or 30-point favorites for every game for the remainder of the year. And that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah. They will be. I think, they'll be 30. It's 30 this week.
Yeah, 30 this week.
It'll be 30, I think, against Michigan State. I think it'll be something close to that against Michigan, unless Michigan like found something with Cade McNamara and like we're doing a thing. Like Michigan finally found its quarterback. It's like, oh,
well, 30 he should have started.
Finally found their quarterback.
In my opinion, right. I mean, I don't know why he didn't start the game against Rutgers, but
I don't know. Like they're not gonna turn things around in a way that Ohio State's gonna be favored by anything less than three touchdowns in that game.
Yeah.
And then I think it'll be much of the same in the Big Ten championship. If it's Wisconsin, somehow. Maybe it's a little closer, but if it's Northwestern, I think Ohio
Northwestern has to lose twice for Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, right.
Did you see the rest of their schedule? They're not losing once.
Yeah. Oh, the Big Ten West is a gauntlet, man.
Yeah. Well, the Big Ten West is bigger than the Big Ten East. I'll give you that.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought coming into this year? But they're going to be favored by at least three, if not four, touchdowns in every game the rest of the year until they get to the playoff, assuming they get there.
The Big Ten West is also home to the most tortured fan base in college football. So,
who's that?
Nebraska.
Oh, God. What Illinois did to them
was... it's just like, it's almost at the point now where it's not funny. Like, it's just, I feel terrible for those people.
I felt bad. Illinois felt bad. They deleted the tweet.
Yeah. That was such a Bush League move to delete it. Like, oh, my God. Did that, like, Omaha World Herald reporter that tweeted, Scott Frost was complimentary of Lovie Smith all week, and this is the thanks he got?
Like, Lovie Smith wrote the tweet.
Yeah, like, I know. Like, come on. Yeah.
We know how this works.
That was funny.
For anybody who wasn't aware, Illinois tweeted after the game, like, thanks, Nebraska, for bringing Big Ten football back after Illinois kicked Nebraska's ass.
Yeah. There's no team. I played the game with Andy Staples, and I went down the list of all the teams with tortured fan bases right now, and there's no team that has a more tortured fan base. You want to play that game real quick? Because I like playing the same game with you and him, and I don't answer. You answer.
Oh, I don't – I mean – tortured. I'm sure Ohio State fans feel that they're tortured, but they're not.
Yeah, I almost dropped an F bomb there. Yeah, they're not tortured. Penn State.
It's Nebraska.
Who's more tortured? Nebraska. Let me see if I can top Nebraska in your mind real quick.
Okay.
Penn State, no?
No.
Michigan?
No. Sure, I think there's a segment of the Michigan fan base that I think is more tortured, but the average Michigan fan I think is not more tortured than the average Nebraska fan.
Texas.
Maybe Texas. I think I'd still pick Nebraska. Texas is a good one. I think I'd still pick Nebraska.
Yeah. I mean, Nebraska is going to be tough to beat, but even through Wisconsin in there, like right when they just started getting excited and it felt like things were different, it just like reverted back. But
yeah.
Okay. I don't know if Wisconsin beats them. I don't think they do. Here's another one, USC.
I don't know if they care enough.
3-0. I guess they're not tortured yet, but they drop another game and they're back to, you know, whatever.
Tennessee.
Oh, maybe Tennessee. Yeah, Tennessee is a good one. Because it's like to get there, you have to factor in, like, there are realistic expectations and then there are pie in the sky expectations from the fan base, and I think both of those fan bases have them, and because they have them, and no, like, they're never gonna get there.
I think you could make the argument that Nebraska has done a much better job rejiggering how they view their program than Tennessee.
Yes. Yeah.
The thing that sucks about Nebraska is that it feels hopeless. And whenever you get to a hopelessness stage, that's the worst part of being a fan. But Tennessee thinks they're Bama still.
Right, right. No, I think Tennessee is more tortured than Nebraska.
And it might be their fault, but, you know, South Carolina is also in the mix there.
Yeah.
And Arizona, nobody cares about Arizona, but they're also hopeless. So, but the fact of the matter is you have two or three major contenders for the hopelessness crown, and they're all in the Big Ten.
But Ohio State is not one of them.
And if you act like you are, get a hobby.
Yeah, yeah. It could be much worse, Ohio State fans. I know you don't like giving up 500 passing yards to Indiana. Nobody does. But you could be Nebraska. Okay, let's wrap up there.
That's the name of the show, Bill.
You could be Nebraska.
Can that be the name of the show, John?
we'll wrap up there. There was recruiting news between our last podcast and this podcast. It's big recruiting news. Ohio State got Quinn Ewers. I think later this week we will dedicate a majority, if not all, of that show to recruiting because they're playing Illinois, and who wants to talk about that? So
agreed.
Look forward to that. Look forward to that later this week. We'll talk about Quinn Ewers, 2021 class, which signs in a little less than a month.
22.
Thank you. 21. He's in 22. They signed the 21 class.
I just wanted to make sure.
There's a lot of balls in the air. We'll talk about all of it later this week. Thank you for listening to this episode of 4-6 with A&B. If you like what you heard, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review. Subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/4-6. Ohio State, Illinois on Saturday. Catch the fever. We'll talk to you guys later in the week.